Thank you for tuning in to Review and Report. I'm your host, Anthony. We have been told all of our lives that monsters don't exist. But what if I told you not only do they exist, but they live among us? So grab a beer, grab a drink, grab whatever it is you're sipping on. Check your doors, make sure they're locked, and let's talk some true crime. Mara Murray went missing on February 9th, 2004, at the young age of 21. Her height was 5'7" and weighed approximately 120 pounds. Brown hair and blue eyes, last seen wearing a dark jacket with denim jeans. The case status is missing person. Last seen on Route 112 near Woodsville, New Hampshire, a village in the town of Haverhill. And this is the missing person case of Mara Murray. Hey, what's up, guys? Anthony here for episode deuce. And I know you're excited, but before we move on, I have got to shout out to my fans. It's been months since season one. And you guys have continued to show me love and support. And that's why every Friday, I'm going to be blowing up a new episode. We're just going to keep going. We're going to keep tracking. I appreciate all the feedback. And anyone out there who wants to reach out to me, just hop on your email. Type in reviewingreport@gmail.com. Hit me up on there. Hit me up on Instagram. Reviewing Report. Facebook, same thing. Guys, I can't wait for season two. I mean, we're already started, so I'm just so excited, guys. And some of you made some suggestions. You said that I was a little formal on the first episode of season two. I was trying to change some things up. Now, I'm still going to be formal. I'm still going to make sure we get the point across on these cases. And a lot of you reached out at the end of season one, wanting to know what was going on with the case that I was investigating out of Colorado. And that case took me down a bright path and a dark path. Kurt Moore's case is still in my mind every day. And it is actually still in my heart daily. And I still look at the case files. But I've stepped back in an attempt to have new eyes. And my eyes have been opened. You guys have been awesome. And we're going to keep chugging along. But don't worry. I'm coming back to that case at some point. Okay, now this week's case, like I said in the beginning, this is about Mara Murray. And Mara was beautiful. She was a young 21-year-old college student at the time of her disappearance. Now, Mara, in the beginning of everything, had a very bright path. I mean, in high school, Mara was one of the top cross-country runners in Massachusetts. I mean, she even broke multiple school records. And I think to this day, she holds multiple different records. She was actually so talented at running that in 1998, as a sophomore in high school, she finished 33rd in the United States in the U.S. National Scholastic Outdoor Championship. Let's be honest, that's one hell of an achievement, right? Now, not only was Mara amazing at sports, but she was extremely, extremely intelligent. She actually graduated at Whitman Hansen Regional High School and was one of the top kids in her class. Now, that's pretty impressive. I mean, I was like decent at sports. At least I say I was decent, but I was probably pretty shitty at sports. And I was like at the bottom of my class. So Mara had a, you know, a bright future, like I said. Now, after high school, Mara had big plans. I mean, she wanted to go to college and she wanted to run in college. You know, she wanted to continue her achievements of high school in college. Now, Mara had a ton of colleges that reached out to her. Hey, hell, you know, you got good grades. You're a hell of a runner. Come on out here. Come run for us. But her sister went to West Point, which was like a, you know, a military school. And she chose to go there. Out of all of the scholarships, out of all the schools that chased her, she chose to go to West Point. And she did cross-country, track, and went for academics. Now, let's fast forward just a little bit. Later during her freshman year at West Point, Mara had reportedly went to the commissary, was shopping there with a friend, and actually stole makeup. Now, shortly after this incident, she ended up transferring to the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Now, while at West Point, and during this trial, because she got put on trial, she met a man named Bill Roush, who later became her boyfriend. Now, we're not going to go into a Bill Roush story right now, because we could go over this douchebag for hours. Go look him up. Bill Roush, he was in the military, and has been known to harass multiple women. So, go check his ass out. Now, there are some reports that I have seen that's how they met, okay? So I don't know if it's 100% fact. I've reached out to Bill. He has not returned my messages, but I believe that's how they met. He was like a junior lawyer at West Point, and he represented Mara for this stolen makeup from the commissary. Sorry, tongue twister. Now, let's move forward a little bit more. Let's start up at when she was at the University of Massachusetts, also known as UMass. On November 2003, at her brand new school, Mara was arrested. Arrested for what? She stole somebody's credit card. I believe she was caught buying pizza or Chinese, but I know she used this card multiple different times. So she was arrested, and she was actually charged this time. But because of her good behavior, the charges were later dropped. Now, let's fast forward a little more. A few days leading up to her disappearance, which would have been February 5th of 04, inside the library on her evening shift. Now, Mara actually worked in college. She worked on campus. You know, she had a college job. I actually had one of those. I think I got fired. But either way, I had one. Now, this is just like a normal evening shift, just like any other day. But this one, she gets a call, okay, on her cell phone from her. Supposedly, it was from her older sister. Now, I don't know if this has actually ever been verified, but this is what her sister claims. So, at some point during this conversation, Mara ends up getting inconsolably upset. She is so upset, she's crying, and she's almost... You can't even understand what she's saying. She is so upset. Now, it gets to the point where the library supervisor was left with no choice but to actually let her off work, you know, go back to your dorm. But she was so upset that the library supervisor ends up walking Mara back to her dorm. That's kind of crazy to me. I mean, shit, I've been upset before, but I've never had to have a boss walk me out. You know what I'm saying? It's just weird. But James Renner, I think, ends up, who's an author from Ohio, ends up having an interview with this supervisor, and she claims that she was just really upset and it was hard to understand. But later at some point, I read online that the sister claims that the conversation was just about her. It was about Mara's sister. It was about how the fact that she was an alcoholic and Mara's sister ends up relapsing. Now, I don't know about you guys, but for me, it's just like, you know, if I love my family, but to be so upset that you can hardly talk because of something like that. I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think? Now, I will be circling back up to what I'm about to say, but I'm trying to set a nice timeline for you guys. On February 7th, which was just 2 days after the library situation, Fred, who's Mara's dad, comes in to town by UMass. He actually stays in a nearby hotel or a motel and takes Mara out car shopping the next day because Mara had a car, which you're going to hear a lot about here soon, okay? But this car was just a piece of shit, I guess, supposedly. And, you know, Fred was just going to take her out. They're going to find a decent car for her. And I believe at some point that night, Fred ends up taking out Mara and one of Mara's friends to dinner. Then Mara ends up going back to Fred's hotel, dropping him off, and borrows Fred's car. And Mara and her friend go to a party. The party ended up like going on until about 3:30 in the morning. And she decided, you know, even after drinking the party, and she was going to drive her dad's car back to his motel. But on the way back, unfortunately, Mara ends up smashing into a guardrail, causing like $10,000 or more worth of damage. Police actually show up that night to the scene, but no tests that I've seen were ever taken. There was no breathalyzer. There was nothing done to see if she had been drinking. Now, that's pretty crazy, but the police officer ends up taking Mara back to Fred's hotel. Now, the next day, her father ended up getting a rental to go back to where he was at, you know, back home. And that day, on February 8th, he talks to Mara at around 11:30 at night. They were talking about the wreck and just trying to figure out what was going to happen next. Now, I believe this was the last time Fred talked to Mara Murray ever again. Now, that's what... Maybe not. That's at least what he says. So now that I have given you a complete breakdown leading up to her disappearance, I want to dive deep into what I've researched regarding this actual disappearance. I've seen in a few spots on the web that on February 9th, she actually uses her computer to look up a location in Vermont. So I personally believe that she was trying to get to Vermont on these days following up to this. Now, according to my research, the area she looked up was Burlington, Vermont. And from UMass, from what I've, you know, I looked this up on Google Maps, it's just over a 3-hour drive. That same day, Mara, actually, she even emails her professors in her campus job that she claims that there was a death in the family and she needed to return home for a few days, but she would be back. And then that same day, she ends up reportedly going to an ATM and withdrawing almost $300. My research also made it clear that she packed her things up, not just for a road trip, but almost her entire dorm. At least the things that matter, you know, everyone has something that matters. Like if you had a bug out of your house right now and never return, you're not going to take everything, but you're going to take the things that matter. And that's what she did. I've also read multiple sources that she even gave her nursing scrubs away. Why the hell would you do that? The only reason you would just give away your shit is like if you're just never coming back. Now, what else I find interesting is Mara then stops at a local liquor store and buys alcohol. Okay. Not just like cold 16-ounce twist top, but like wine, a box of wine, actually. A box of wine, some like Sprite or something like that, and some liquor. Now, looks like, according to my research, she must have left and headed towards her destination. Now, shit, we don't remember what her destination is. We just think, well, we know what she looked up. Okay, but we don't know exactly where she was headed. But she left somewhere after 4 o'clock p.m. on February 9th. Now, I've read multiple reports on these different times that the first 911 call comes in. And, you know, I don't have the actual reports, so I'm not going to know. But this call supposedly was placed at 727. I believe there was a first call from someone who lived on that same route that that Mara wrecked on. Supposedly she had heard a very loud thump. She then looks out the window, sees a vehicle, and according to some of my research, it's even logged that the girl sees a man outside of the vehicle or possibly inside of the vehicle taking puffs from a cigarette. She sees a red glow, possibly from the passenger side of the vehicle or just outside of the passenger side of the vehicle. Also, right after this 911 call, another call comes in from a school bus driver who was headed home that lived across the street. Now, this dude is a weird dude, okay? And we're not going to name names because I don't want to get in trouble, but he's a weird dude. And if you Google it, you'll figure out what his name is. You'll see a picture of him. I'm not saying I'm the smokingest, hottest dude around, but this dude looks like a creep. Now, the man knew, like, there was a situation because he sees the car wrecked on the side of the road. So he pulls over and he says three different stories to the police. One of them was she was inside the car. He stops. She looks upset. He tries to help. She refuses the help. So he goes home across the street, parks the bus, then calls 911. Then another report is she was standing outside of the car and she was shivering and cold. And, you know, he asked if she wants to come to his house to help warm her up and call the police. She says no because she called AAA. But according to this man, he knows that she's lying because in the mountains of New Hampshire, unfortunately, there's no service on cell phones. The man then goes home supposedly and calls the police. And this shows that the call comes in at like 7:43. But some reports say that someone else that lived on the same road was headed home from work and saw a police SUV on the opposite direction in front of Mara's car. But according to the driver, when they got out to check out what was going on, there was no one in sight. Okay, there's no one near the police SUV and there was no one near Mara's car. So they just got back in the car and drove home. I mean, if you go in, like, you see something in the pitch dark, a police car, and then someone pulled over, and then nobody's near, kind of weird shit. You would probably call the police. But according to local authorities, police didn't even show up to the scene until 7:46. So this person that saw this SUV parked on the opposite direction of Mara's car, according to the Haverhill police, that's just not possible because there was not a police officer there until 7:46. Now, that's give or take time. I'm just going off research. Now, remember, I'm building this timeline off of research. So some of this may not be the most accurate ever, but it is close. And I'm somewhat guessing on by a few minutes on some of these things. Now, according to authorities, when police get there, there was nobody at Mara's car, and the door to the car was locked. It was also logged in the report that the car was obviously had been in like a wreck. Okay, there was damage to the front, there was damage to the side. The car and the car body was messed up. The windshield had impact to it. Both airbags were blown. One of the officers were able to get into the vehicle, and they noticed that there was a red stain. But it wasn't blood. It was actually from the wine that Mara or whomever was in the car and that was drinking it. They also found some personal items in the car, but all her credit cards and phone and things like that were gone. But all those personal things that she packed from her dorm were in there. And actually, to this day, none of that stuff was ever found. I've also read that it's possible that the alcohol she purchased was also among the items that were in there. But I also have read items that the alcohol was missing, but I'm not sure if that's a rumor or not. Now, at 8:49, Mara's car was towed. A weird part reported was that the rag There was a rag shoved in the tailpipe of Mara's car. According to Fred, that was okay because it smoked a lot, so they shoved a rag. I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense, Fred. I've had plenty of cars smoke on me. Never shoved a fucking rag in it. So that, Fred, if you listen to this, that's weird, buddy. That's weird. So you told your daughter to shove a rag into the muffler of her car so it doesn't smoke? That doesn't make sense. Now, if you Google this case, you're going to find so many rabbit holes, it's not even funny. But I believe it's possible that Mara ran away on her own free will. And we can't get into this all night long. But I will say this. Bill Rausch, look him up. I think it's possible that she was running from Bill. I think that the things that were Googled on her computer, not everything we touched on, shows that she was running. So was it possible that someone was either tailing her or she was following somebody? She then wrecks the car, then gets in, and then continues on her way. There supposedly have been multiple sightings of Mara, not only in the United States, but actually mainly Canada. Or did Mara meet someone that night wanting to help her that brutally murdered her? That's a very, very low possibility, especially on the road where this wreck was, because it was so rural. There was not a lot of car traffic, especially this time at night. Now, I want to hear what you guys have to think on this case. It's a pretty wild case. There's a lot more research you can do, but I'll leave that up to you. Now, next week, I will be coming live to you from a beach, and we will be talking about a case of a girl on a vacation in Myrtle Beach that goes missing and is never heard from again. So continue to do what you do and listen to my podcast. Give me suggestions. Reach out to me. ReviewingReport@gmail.com, Instagram at ReviewingReport, podcast, or Facebook at the same. I appreciate you guys, and we'll talk soon. Don't forget, check your doors and make sure they're locked.